All right, Dieter and Hutch, saying things that should be said to no other man. after the 49ers, in a very business-like performance, did what playoff teams are supposed to do, Jake, and they made the Cleveland Browns look like the Cleveland Browns. 26-8 is the final score. And Jake, I'm just gonna say this off the jump. We nailed it, buddy. We had this thing pegged from,
well 3,000 miles away. To be clear, I picked the Browns from the start of the season to win this game. That said, I did, as it was getting closer, go, oof, that they're so bad on offense. But I stuck to what I said from the start of the season on principle.
Yeah.
While knowing that offense is hot trash. And I think I underestimated. I was also expecting rain. I was expecting rain in this game a little bit, and it didn't come. And Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan were so efficient. I mean, it's not like they were driving the ball insanely. Like, the run game was averaging like 2.8 a clip.
Yep.
But like, they wore down the clock. Brock made smart decisions almost every time. I don't know if I've seen him throw the ball away that much since he was a rookie.
Right.
I was impressed. I was really impressed.
Yeah, today was definitely not a day to be trying to make something happen down the field. And to Brock's credit and to Kyle's credit, they dialed up third down plays that didn't require him to do superhuman things, right? Guys were getting open. That throw to Kittle on that kind of over route that they run, I think they call it a Spartan route, which is like a box and go, was really good to set up the first touchdown. There was just a lot of really positive things that they did. And ultimately, in a game against the Cleveland Browns on the road before a bye week, the goal is to just do the least, right? Just get the hell up out of there, because that Browns defense was everything we advertised it to be. Really awesome. The coolest play call of the game for me, amid many of them from Kyle, was that read option near the goal line with Purdy. Because you and I both noted in watching the Browns tape that, like, you can get him with read option, and that's cool for another team because you're not running read option with your turf toe tiny quarterback. And yet there it was, and Brock ran it to perfection. I will say, as you noted, the guy who crashed, the second defensive end who crashed.
They had two defensive ends waiting, and the guy who was playing contain just didn't read at all where the ball was going.
Yeah,
and just crashed down and blew it. So good on Purdy. Hit a little. I think he hit the Dougie for a sec. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
I have to hit the Dougie in an Indian wedding in a few weeks, but that's for another time.
Before we get into the studs and duds of this game, and I think that the studs outweigh the duds by a considerable margin, though there are some.
Agreed.
Duds. Are the Carolina Panthers secretly the turnover kings of football? What's going on here?
Couldn't tell you. I only saw some. I didn't watch that whole game. Obviously, it was simultaneous. But, Matthew Stafford, I think, had, what was it, 28 straight games or something? Like, or 28 touchdowns in a row without a pick. And then turned through two picks, fumbled. Listen, J.C. Horn was, like, single-handedly doing it. But I got to give credit to their D.C. Evero. And I said, like, you should switch the job roles where it's like Canales is the OC, Evero is the head coach, and you'd be feeling real good about that team going forward.
You noted, I don't think that Carolina will move on from Canales, mainly because their record says that they're good, even though we all know that they're not, even with today's victory. I think that the Niners have gotten four head coaches fired this year. I think that if you wanted to peg it down to, okay, here's the game where we know this isn't going to work. I would say Arizona week 11. I would say obviously New York Giants week 9, because they've already fired their head coach. I would say week 7 against the Falcons. And then I would add this game. I don't think Kevin Stefanski is a particular – I don't know if Kevin Stefanski is a good or a bad coach, but whatever they were doing today, and it's not his fault that Shedeur Sanders sucks – and I do think that, you know, him and Tommy Rees were doing a good job of giving Shedeur Sanders chances to be successful. But ultimately, he will be blamed for that debacle. And my goodness, what an insult to football that Browns offense is.
I love when Shedeur loaded up for that one throw where you're like, oh, that's going. And then the ball literally turned sideways and started funneling. Like the extra point, or I mean the field goal that doinked. at a volume that I have not heard in a long time, but there was so
Shout
much.
Shout out the parabolic mic guy.
He was killing it. Yeah. Also, the ref, that the broadcast didn't mention the ref. Every time he spoke, you could just hear the wind howl.
It was awesome.
But that throw just started turning sideways on itself. Malik Mustafa was completely loafing on that play.
Yeah, that would have knocked him out of the studs category, because that was like legitimate fundamental play in the game where you're like, okay, they've now committed entirely on defense to stopping the run, and now Shedeur Sanders is going to, you know, hit him over the top. And it's the same thing we saw with the Browns against the Raiders last week, where, you know, you run it, you screen it, and then eventually the defense gets caught lacking, frankly, and he hits him over the top. Now, he only did it once. He was probably only going to do it once in this game, but the chance they had to do it in this game, it didn't even come through. The one time they did actually move the ball through the air, it was because Luke Gifford was playing Sam linebacker against Harold Fannin.
He is anytime there's like an out and up or anything that vaguely resembles a wheel, he's like, oh no, oh God, I can't move that way.
It is a testament to how bad Cleveland's offense is that the 49ers linebacking core, of which D Winters is still very good and outstanding in covering the flat. Yeah. Don't get me wrong on that. He has nothing to do with this. But Curtis Robinson, who is just stuck in mud.
I think he's my only dud of the game.
Can't move. And Luke Gifford, who is somehow moving, but actually, he's doing movements, but he's not actually moving. That those two guys were not exploited, but perhaps one time. I mean, I suppose Gifford got caught.
Robinson, they went at him a few times on that as they were driving the ball before that touchdown. Right. He got it cleared out quite a bit at the second level. And I really underestimated how much worse he'd be than Tatum Bethune, but he is like a pretty steep drop off. I thought he'd be better in coverage. And he would be worse in the run game, and he's so much worse in the run game.
Yeah, and I think he's worse in coverage somehow. At least Bethune knows how to move his body to at least present a facsimile of coverage. He's not good at it, but he at least kind of thinks it through well enough to at least, you know, cover some space. And this is kind of my big takeaway for the game. Like, the Niners have 9 wins on the season now. They're going into this bye week, which, for all the belly aching they did, this is your trade-off. You get the easiest schedule in the NFL in years, and now you get a late bye. And ironically, this late bye might have set up perfectly for this team, because you now get another week for Brock's toe to heal. You get possibly Tatum Bethune back.
You get to just warm up.
Not be in Cleveland, as someone who just spent a week in Seattle where it rained every day, it's not even warm in the Bay today. It's just like, dear manna from heaven, I saw the sun. I imagine a lot of guys will be going to Cabo for the long weekend, and God bless them, I would too. But you get Sam Aquanu back, possibly. You can get maybe Yetur Gross-Matos back. And it's not to say that this is some team that can go and really compete for the Super Bowl, but I'll be blunt here. A team that is taking care of business in ugly games the last 2 weeks now, which should probably take care of business again, have 10 wins in the bag going into that Colts, Bears, Seahawks stretch with a Purdy that's healthy and can drive the ball like he did in Arizona, and frankly, like he did today, albeit in adverse conditions. Like, this team's kind of dangerous now, and at 9-4, NFL says they're 93% likely to make the playoffs. That might go up, down. I don't know what happens with the Seahawks game.
I don't know how that works. I don't trust the numbers.
The Bears are the number one seed in the NFC as we speak right now. I think the NFC West might be back in the picture. It's not in their control, but it's back in the picture. And in that case, like, a high seed might be back in the picture for this team. I think that we have viewed the Niners as this team that is just holding on and trying to latch on, and is kind of a chaser. And in a weird way, just because they've been so professional and efficient and ruthless over these last couple weeks and taking care of business, they might be the team in the NFC that needs to be chased if they can get a couple more wins in a row here going into these final 2 weeks. It's a bizarre circumstance, but I do think that's the case.
Coming off a bye, they get the Titans, and then the Colts are limping right now. The Colts are really limping. So you got them, and then it's like, who knows what the Bears are? They have a +6 point differential. Yeah, they have the best record in the NFC, but it's a mess. And then
Niners are going to be favored against them on Monday Night Football. Guaranteed.
I think they're going to favor the rest of the way except for the Seahawks game. Although the Colts are on the road, that might be the Colts will probably be favored, or it'll be that might be even. that might be
on what
it.
They do against Tennessee, and we'll have time to.
We'll see.
Down.
We'll see.
Yeah, I mean they're in it. They are. It's really a bona fide team now.
I think when I look at it, as much as it is an easy schedule, and it is, like we pointed that out from the start of the season.
Yep.
This is Kyle Shanahan should really strongly be in the top of that Coach of the Year conversation, because this is as professional, I think, as they've looked, given that it's a team betting on rookies, betting on random pieces, and they've just been with the exception of a few guys, just very professional week in and week out, and very competitive, and the start of the season was ugly, but like they've executed fairly well. And the fact that special teams, which is something we need to talk about, is now they're the best special teams unit in the league. They finally found a good special teams coordinator, and now it's just like something that's a fact is bizarre.
So funny, Jake, because you and I talked in the preseason so much about how special teams looked like it was going to make a turn, and how interesting it was, and how much positivity. And to be fair, it was the only place they invested money, so maybe we had to talk about it in that way. Maybe we were lulled by the cash into a false sense of security. And they looked awful for the first couple weeks the Moody situation drug on. And
God, I almost forgot about Jake Moody.
Right, well, they're on their third kicker this season, and each one of them seems to be getting better. I don't know. Mackey hasn't missed anything yet. So not just that, but it's the little things. Sky Moore just getting more and more comfortable. I do think that Sky was put into a kind of a tough position, getting brought in to kind of bail out Boyer. And then he had a couple of questionable decisions. And then I think he was getting tentative. And basically, I don't know who got in his ear and told him, you need
let him rip.
You need to go as hard as you can, because there's no upside in thinking. And
by the way,
fantastic. Yeah.
By the way, for as much as we've sort of bellyached about, them losing some games to teams that we don't think highly of, they've only lost to teams with winning records. They've only lost to the Rams, the Jaguars, the Texans, and the Bucks.
Yeah.
It's the only teams they've lost to.
And that's going to be an interesting data point, and we'll see what happens down the stretch with three should be in the playoff teams coming in the last four. But that will be an interesting data point once we get into the postseason. Are they just bottom feeders, or can they elevate their games? That first game against the Seahawks, which feels like both yesterday and 5 years ago, and that Monday or that Thursday night football game against the Rams loom large in sort of beating that narrative, but one for down the line. In addition, on the special teams thing, not to beleaguer the point, but Weeks and Morstead have been dynamite all year. And Saran Neal, I think Luter and Saran Neal as gunners have been really, really good. And then Isaac Arendo had a play today. Nick Martin making a breakthrough.
Two muffs and a forced fumble. And I think it's interesting. Morstead, I watch him before the snap, and more than any other punter I've seen from the 49ers, is talking and organizing stuff at the line of scrimmage like a quarterback. He's telling guys what's going on. And he's like trying to put it at the 10. It doesn't seem like he's trying to almost get inside the 10 because there's that thing of out kicking your coverage. And I think he knows I want to get it safely inside the 15. I'm an old man. We're going to play it safe. We're going to make sure that they have poor field position, but we're not going to go for broke, and we're going to set it up where my coverage can get down there. Underrated component of it that again, I'm not well versed in that, but it does seem like he's pretty sharp, obviously, and is setting them up for success on every punt.
He doesn't want to have to run again. He had to run after Parker Washington in the Jaguars game. That was one where I don't think he outkicked his coverage. I think that was just straight up bad kick coverage. But I think there's something to be said for a lot of guys trying to pin him inside the 5. Forget that, man. You got 90 yards to go. Just do it at the 10 every time. Get a little height on it. Make them fair catch it at the 10. They'll always fair catch it at the 10. It's good stuff. And kick, I think kick return coverage has gotten a lot better too.
Yeah. Nick Martin, before he got concussed, had another one. I've been impressed with that. Again, it was always going the other way and blocking that would be the concern with him. But you let him fly towards the ball, mostly unimpeded, good things happen.
Yeah.
He's a football player.
He
is a football player.
He knows how to kill if you let him operate in open space.
Yeah. How about Malik Mustafa? Speaking of that, just I know we made fun of that one play, but his speed to the ball, no one could tackle Judkins, and Mustafa was like popping him at the line in the backfield multiple times this game.
Him and Keon White had, each of them had a handful of ooh boy hits. And I even think Mustafa had one where the ref's mic picked up like a goddamn or an ooh boy.
Ooh.
like from the ref.
Yeah.
Which you will get every now and again, I hear from on the field. Like the refs do sort of a play by play of like, oh Jesus. Like, and that's when you know these
it's like
are
when
guys.
Yeah, it's like when Geno saw Aaron Donald running. He's like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he carries some serious pop. I thought, actually, Jair had a bunch of really good plays in this game as well. And
he's been good, man.
He has been. He has been very good. I'm still a bit confused as to the delineation of responsibilities. It seems both of them want to just be the strong safety. And at some point, someone has to cover the top. But...
And let's be clear, they haven't been challenged deep in two games. So
three.
The fact that the Browns are like just fully done with Dylan Gabriel. Remember when they drafted him in the third fucking round? And everyone literally... I don't even think anyone tried to pretend, because most people, usually there's like a Spencer Rattler type apologist who's like, oh my God,
a five star who was talked about as a Heisman candidate.
And he's done some good things in the NFL. Right. But like you watched him and you're like, no, absolutely not. No chance. And they went third round. And then,
if you're going to take a swing, I mean, day two, day three, why not?
I got to say, in Shador's defense, I guess he wasn't egregious for a lot of this game. He wasn't good, but like I didn't see him doing incredible boneheaded stuff all game.
No, it doesn't look like what Max Brosmer looks like right now for the Vikings.
I was so disappointed. So disappointed with my boy Max Brosmer. Well, to be fair, worst possible situation be in.
I was actually thinking, like, who has it tougher going into this game? The Seahawks Vikings game, which is of course what everyone tuned in to listen to us talk about, but like, who had it tougher? Is it Sam Darnold going up against a Vikings defense that knows exactly how bad he is?
Right.
And it's like the Vikings defense, one that we hold up as sort of this standard of chaos defense.
Yes.
Or Max Brosmer going up against Seattle. And the answer was unquestionably Max Brosmer going up against Seattle. This Seattle defense is for real. Let's go into some more studs and duds. We both love what we saw from Malik Mustafa. I'm going to throw Kyle Juszczyk at you.
I love it. A
very understated performance, right? He has that catch on, I think it was even the first offensive play. Really, really positive play. As you noted, you sent me a text. It was a perfect, it was a rule-breaking play is the way that I would phrase it, where they've run this dash motion, and my God, did they use
dash motion. And they're always running. They're always using it on running plays, and then he just sort of leaked out on a corner route for that opening play.
Yeah, and that was great. That made Cleveland think a little bit. And then the rest of the game as a lead blocker, and we, again, acknowledge that the Niners did not move the ball with any real pop on the ground today. But they were able to maintain possession in an adverse weather condition, set up third and somewhat manageable, is at least keep them in positions where they weren't, you know, trying, they could run a play that could get somebody open as opposed to just hoping something worked out for them. I thought Juszczyk was immense in this game. And honestly, it was kind of noticeable when he wasn't in there in the fourth quarter after he left with a rib injury. Like, whatever they had got diminished by that much.
Would you say he's been a revelation? This
because the dash motion has been a wonderful advancement and is going to become standard. By the way, shout out to Kyle Juszczyk for just not giving a flying fuck about the rules on dash motion. Just he's full Tyreek Hill cheat motioning this thing. He is moving towards the line of scrimmage every time. It's fantastic.
I know. I talked to McCaffrey and Kittle like last week after the game last week about it. And they're both like, yeah, you got to be real, real, real careful you can only trust a few guys to run that one.
Yeah.
If you do look closely, for the most part, he is abiding by the rules. I mean, most people aren't abiding by the rules. I saw one today where McCaffrey was like literally going forward as the ball was snapped sort of lazily. And they're like, whatever. Yeah.
No, the refs weren't going to call that. I mean, there was actually Pearsall ran an actual cheat motion.
yeah,
in which he was coming. He was full Canadian football leaguing.
100%. I think honestly, it's a little bit of like the NBA with not allowing like hand checking and that stuff. Mm-hmm. Sort of like getting some more freedom of movement for like the ball handler as the NBA has done it, which is, I think, sort of destroyed the game a little bit. I think it allows for more scoring and more fun. And also the product is cheapened and is garbage.
Yes.
But, you know, with cheap motion, it makes the game, it opens up more possibilities for offenses, which I think the NFL is always going to be in favor of.
Yeah. To their detriment, because it will probably ruin the league eventually. No one likes watching Big 12 football. Least of all us when we had to watch Shedeur Sanders.
Certainly wasn't Big 12 football today.
No, it was not. That was Big 10 football, which
was
is
rollerball,
baby.
go watch rollerball.
Yeah. Who's a stud for you?
Who's a stud for me? I was going to say Kittle. I know that's an extremely obvious one, but there was like one block he made, and maybe it was a hold, but like he hit Myles Garrett. And then it sprung McCaffrey for a first down. And then he like sort of taunted Myles Garrett, who seems, by the way, incredibly nice. Just like a super nice dude who's like, just an enormous, incredible athlete, but, not a lunatic, which
how many some first rounders would you trade for Myles Garrett right now?
Like, how many would I trade, or how many do I think is fair?
Fair.
I think two first rounders and more, but I think three first rounders for one player. Imagine doing that. Imagine spending three first round picks on one player. At least Myles Garrett's proven. Yeah. Imagine doing that for a player who's not proven and not proven in the FBS.
Right.
Imagine that.
Sauce Gardner got two. I think that the going rate for a Myles Garrett is four. I think he's getting the full Mikal Bridges package right now. If we had to put him on the market. And
yeah,
I think the Browns.
I can't argue against it. He's got 19 sacks. By the way, just briefly, I want to shout out our guy Nick Wagoner, who pointed out a stat from his employer ESPN. Yeah. Brock Purdy was pressured on 58% of his dropbacks today, which is
a lot.
The only time he's been pressured on more than half of his dropbacks. Garrett
That's
had
crazy.
Six of them. Yeah,
he had a couple of awesome escapes in this game,
and Trent Williams did an incredible job of losing, but like sealing at the last possible second where you're like, is it a hold? Is it not a hold? Nope.
Yeah.
Trent's clever. He's a Hall of Famer. You can't call those on him.
Dud for me, Trent Green again. I can't.
God, can we get a good broadcast? Does one exist?
Maybe. Well,
the 49ers don't get any good broadcasts. It's always like the C team.
I don't know who's going to do the Fox game against Tennessee. It will probably not be great, but I will say that we're going to probably get three elite ones in a row. Depends on how you feel.
Is Greg Olson a Fox guy?
Greg Olson's a Fox guy. I highly doubt they send Greg, who's currently at Vikings Seahawks, to 49ers Titans at 125. But
come on, send him.
Next week. Oh no, I don't know. 2 weeks.
From 2 weeks.
Sorry. But you get Monday Night Football. You get Sunday Night Football. I mean, it doesn't matter how you feel about Collinsworth. Tirico is as good as it gets, and NBC puts on a hell of a show. And then Week 18 will, in all likelihood, be depending on what Seattle needs.
Brady.
Right? We want the number two.
I know.
That's what we want. We want Joe.
I know.
We want Joe.
But like, we're gonna get the number one team. It's gonna be the number one team for that Seahawks game. I'll be watching from Guatemala.
Sometimes
we'll cross
I think
that
Tom Brady's watching from Guatemala. Sometimes I think Trent Green was watching from Guatemala. His comment about how they like to move Myles Garrett around. It's like, oh,
right.
No, they don't.
Not true.
85% of the time against left tackle. And
they caught the two snaps when he was against McKivitt.
Yeah, he was on a rough one, as he has been for most of these. No thanks. Who else you got? Stud, dud, hit me with one.
Who else? I got to say Purdy, because I don't feel like we've actually talked enough about him. But like, he was so smart in this game. And I think like when we look back on the Panthers game, again, most of my issue with him was like not necessarily on those interceptions. It came after that. It was in the 2 minutes before the first half. He had three like horrific reps in a row. And then he was a little bit more tentative. He was dictating to Juwan Jennings a little bit too much. So, like, that's the stuff that was bothering me. And the first interception, whatever. The other one, like, the ball came out late. and J.C. Horn made a play on it, but it was a great play from J.C. Horn. And so some of that,
you wrote about how when he was asked in the press conference how he felt like he was patting the ball too much, this and that. I mean, you and I had a bit of a debate on if his timing and some of the things that we saw certainly against Jacksonville and then upon his return, if that was him, if that was a physical limitation or if that was if he was seeing it wrong. I don't think we'll ever get the real answer because he still does have turf.
And I think it's, I said like the kinetic chain thing, I think it's like a little bit of like time off, not fully trusting your body to be where it is. And then any little bit of doubt is going to slow the whole process down. And then it can be like a sort of a chain of events, a snowball thing where you're like, you're sort of doubting yourself a little bit. And then if you're a quarterback like him, you have no ability to waste any of that time. And in this game, his feel in the pocket was fucking tremendous. Like he was able to escape time after time after time, and he threw the ball away. Like he just threw the ball away. And I know some people will be like, oh, like you're praising a guy for throwing it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Against that defense in that weather. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Now, if you're going up against a team that you know can put 21 points on the board, then there's a different calculus, and then you have to force it a little bit.
Yep.
But when you're I wish this wasn't a firebrand statement. I wish this didn't come across as controversial. I'm just going off of the player. When you're going up against Shedeur Sanders and the Cleveland Browns, don't do dumb stuff.
Yep.
They'll take the quota for the game. And like, again, it comes back to the 49ers did what you're supposed to do if you're a playoff team. Let the Browns do their Browns thing. Make the Browns look like the Browns and get the hell up out of their way. And they'll hand you a football game, which they
did. That O-line has given up, by the way.
Can't blame
They have like veterans and they just went, nah, we're done. We don't
really injured too, to be fair.
True. True. They were on the,
but yeah. There's nothing of quality outside of Judkins and I guess the tight ends. I'm being hyperbolic here, but like,
I know
when you don't have a quarterback and your wide receivers are a joke. I mean, Judy just alone is a joke.
I hate him.
What are we operating with?
And it's like, again, with Shedeur, it's like he could become a good quarterback, but it's a tough situation to be in. It's a tough way to start your career with a coach who, like, almost explicitly hates him, by the way. Stefanski
wasn't his pick.
Let me just say he's being a dick about it. Like, I know it's not on him, but, like, his way of, like, handling this whole situation is just sort of like, I hate my life and I hate all of this.
Yeah.
And he's, like, almost it feels like he's trying to take everyone down with him.
Yeah, well, you know, the threshold for being a dick as a coach has been kind of lifted in the last 24 hours. So I think Stefanski just wants to get canned. I just think that's the case. And I think that let me put it to you this way. I saw Kyle after the game being real lovey-dovey with Jim Schwartz because every week Robert Saleh is like, I'm so good at this.
That would be beautiful. I honestly think nothing would be more pure than seeing Kyle poach Jim Schwartz if Saleh leaves and going, listen. And then it's just the best version of the 49ers that we've ever seen.
And it's ridiculous.
It's
the only way that they could upgrade.
They
might win the Super Bowl. I think they can win the Super Bowl with their current coaching staff.
Correct. And that's not a criticism of Saleh. It's just like Schwartz is the exact guy who has known how to ruin Kyle Shanahan's day.
Right.
And I would just love to see that. Not that I want Saleh to leave, but
the Jedi Master of the cover three. Another mea culpa. I cannot possibly say this enough. Schwesinger, the linebacker. Swing and a miss from your boy. I had a third round grade on him. That's an all-time error by me. That guy is the second coming of Fred Warner.
Fred didn't look that good as a rookie. And I'm not saying he's going to be better, but Fred did not look that good as a rookie.
Holy crap. I don't know if I've been. I mean, we saw it on the tape. We talked about it a little bit. But I don't know if I've, in the game, for it to manifest the way that it did, I don't know if I've ever been as impressed with a rookie linebacker as I have been with that kid. And I have to like legitimately go back to the drawing board and look at how I evaluate linebackers during the draft period.
In your defense, there were a lot of sort of leggy, athletic, Big 12-y types that were at linebacker. There's a kid from Oklahoma who I particularly remember. I forget his name, but like there were a lot of guys like that where you're like super speedy, but like, is this guy just like a flash in the pan? Is he actually going to provide the sort of thump? And I think those UCLA jerseys, not to be weird, but like they are, I think they make guys look skinnier than they are.
I think they're so pretty too. They're too
yeah,
pretty.
I think that's what it is. And so you're like, this guy's like thin, like he's not going to be able to be physical enough. And he absolutely is. He's been phenomenal.
I mean, it's easy. Again, I should note, you throw that guy into the 49ers and it probably doesn't look the same. It's a lot easier to get these clean looks and to explode towards the football when you have Garrett.
But I bet the 49ers wish they had Schwesinger.
Oh, boy. I think every team in football wishes they had him. He is yeah. He is really something special.
Yeah.
For all the knocks I have on the Browns, I think that we could fix him. I think we could do it.
Absolutely.
I think that there's so much to work with. I think that's actually in a weird way.
Someone's like, the Browns are going to tear it down. I'm like, what do you mean tear it down?
When was it ever up?
Just get some wide receivers.
Get a wide receiver, get quarterbacks, and get somebody yeah. Who has the stones. And to Stefanski's credit, I mean, he's held them off this long to keep Jimmy Haslam out and doing something else. Like, doesn't Jimmy Haslam have like multiple federal lawsuits that he's dealing with? Like, you don't know. Okay.
I have no idea.
It made Jake uncomfortable.
Sure.
Let's talk about lies in trucker ass cards. Let's talk about those. No. Okay. Duds. Who do you have as a dud?
I would say Curtis Robinson
yeah.
and Luke Gifford. I'm not going to say he's a dud, but Alfred Collins is just not as consistent as I want him to be. And it's, listen, like he's making a couple
good Collins day.
Plays every game, but like I need him to just keep growing. Like keep every week I want to see development. And you're sort of like, oh, he's making a stride, and then he sort of disappears, and then he's making a stride, and then you're like, I haven't seen him in 2 weeks. It's just like frustrating because there's so much untapped there. And again, I don't think we're gonna see anywhere near a finished product by the end of the season. I just want to see a little bit more.
I think it will get there. I think, you know, Kittle shouted him out today in the presser, talking about his effort and how much he enjoys watching him.
Incredible effort.
Yeah. I just progress isn't linear. And today would have been a great day for him to explode. I think there were opportunities there. I did see him getting pushed back quite a bit when I noted it in the run game. I'm sure there were moments where he was very good as well. That fourth down stop, I thought he had a good rep early in the contest where Mustafa made the stop. There's plenty there. I'm not sure. I'm with you. I'm not sure it's going to break out at any point this season, but I do think it could. I do think that the dam could break here and he could just be an absolute hoss.
Also,
yeah,
coming off of a bye, like they were talking about Mikel needing a bye week. I'm sure Collins needs ones too. He's battled through a lot this year.
Lately.
He came in with that like foot ankle thing. Like there's an element of that and getting a bye week and then facing the Titans. Like,
yeah.
That's like this could be the game.
This is what I keep coming back to. Like this team feels, and perhaps it's just because their inherent quality is confounding. Like there's nothing about this team that you can peg, but there's something about this team right now. And I'm trying not to be a prisoner of the moment because we don't typically do that here. We try to be analytical and reasoned and emotionally removed because we don't care if they win or lose. We just want to see cool shit.
Right.
This team feels like it has the chance, a very good chance, to be very dangerous, and that there might be a completely different narrative about this team in a month from now as opposed to today. So I'm not going to write off. I'm with you. Today would have been a great day for Alfred Collins to break out. But just because it didn't happen today doesn't mean that I don't think it's going to, and that's not what you were saying. But
No. I'm just saying there weren't
a bit more of an optimistic tone.
There weren't that many duds in this game. And I just want a little bit more. I will say it's been awesome to see Kevin Givens not playing, truly just a meaningless watch. And they just have benched him for, I think, the last 3 weeks at this point after, you know, guaranteeing him one of the only guys that got like a full guarantee. Sure. Yeah. It was $2 million. Like fully guaranteed his deal.
Gave him Nate Sudfeld. I'm gonna give a dud here. I'm gonna give a dud to Juwan Jennings. So I wrote him down as a dud a couple times. I know he had a touchdown in the game, and it was a very nice touchdown. Don't get me wrong. That and he had another, I think, third down conversion. This is partially a Brock criticism, as you've alluded to. They're still trying to force feed Juwan Jennings, and I don't understand why.
I want way more DeMarcus Robinson.
I'd like that little reverse they ran to DeMarcus Robinson in this game.
I don't understand anything, like almost everything. Yeah. Alberto, that's where I was going with it. So we're going to take comments in a second, but like, if you haven't seen it, Shelby Harris.
Yeah, now's your time. We're asking Shelby you to Harris leave the screen.
Said an insane thing that he said. I won't repeat it, but he basically said Juwan Jennings is out there saying insane shit, and he's not surprised that he got punched in the balls, and he's surprised somebody hasn't punched him in the face. That is a direct from Shelby Harris. So
that is in the context. Accurate paraphrasing.
The context is he was asked about like a scuffle while Malik Collins, former 49er, was being carted off the field, and like other 49ers were going up to him and like paying respect. And so it was during that. And Myles Garrett was like, yeah, some people say some things that they shouldn't say about people's families. So I'll leave it at that. That's what they said. Those are not my words. That's what happened. So
one is a notorious trash talker. He views himself in the Draymond Green ilk.
He draws a lot of penalties over the years by getting guys pissed off.
Yeah. And being I don't know what he said to them upon throws because he cannot separate. Much like Draymond Green, I do think that we might be a little bit over the hill now with Juwan Jennings. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I think the amount that they feed him, and again, he's battled through injuries and stuff, but like he does not separate. Like he did on that touchdown on the little like glance, whatever, in the red zone. Yeah. That was nice. But like 90% of the time, any route that's beyond 5 yards and requires any sort of double move or any real hesitation, he can win with that first step, but someone's closing on him within the third step. Like he gets a tight amount of separation, but it's never real significant separation. And they're used to that where he just like has a big wingspan and makes tight window catches, but he's not a separator.
It's not new. We know what's up, and it would be nice if it was this isolated thing where you get somebody who can make catches on third downs. But when you're kind of trying to funnel the passing offense through him, when you have
Pearsall
who's getting wide open, when you have Robinson who looks better,
I guess
the alternative is Kendrick Bourne. But
I like that they threw one ball to Kendrick Bourne, almost a sick catch. And they're like, yeah, they want to get him involved a little bit more. It's like, that was the last time we saw him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might be the last time we see him overall. It should be noted. I'm sorry. Who's the wide receiver they took out of Ole Miss? Forgive me.
Jordan Watkins.
Inactive today.
Yep.
Jordan James. We're still waiting.
Remember that? Remember Jordan James?
Yeah, I really did my best because running backs is such a tricky position to evaluate. I really did my best.
Because scheme and personnel up front can dictate a lot for guys we hate. Luckily, we were not wrong about Caleb Johnson, who's
had that peg for a
meatball on wheels, folks.
When you watch the James tape, you're like, okay. And then you hear him talk about it and you're like, oh, that's the opposite of what I saw, but okay.
Right.
And then this is legitimately just maybe a crisis of confidence for me when someone's does, you know, when they talk about why they like a guy and it's the exact reasons why I don't like a guy, I do sometimes be like, well, okay, they probably saw more than I did, or they have data I don't, like, they, you know, they're professionals, like they're better at this than I am. Right.
Maybe
not always.
Maybe
not always.
Not always.
Another swing and a miss there with Jordan James. Maybe next year.
Maybe.
That's, again, what they said.
We'll see. By the way, Isaac Arendo, put him at linebacker. Just make the switch. They need a linebacker. He's physically the size of your linebackers. Just let him go.
Yeah. That would be something. Now, that would be something. Can you teach him how to play Mike?
That would be – I would actually love – that's something that they should do in the Pro Bowl to make people watch the Pro Bowl. Switch everyone's positions.
Everyone position difference. By the way, they're doing the Pro Bowl on a Tuesday at the Moscone Convention Center this year.
Are they doing it virtually via AI? They're just going to simulate the,
in a matter of time, my friend.
Trying to make an AI joke.
Otherwise, I will be at the Pro Bowl this year because it's at a Tuesday in the afternoon in downtown San Francisco in a convention center.
I forgot. Much like when they played. I forgot it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. They like, no one wants it. So we're just going to do it like on Radio Row.
It's incredible.
It's 10 out of 10. No notes.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a stud to Robert Saleh in this game.
Great.
And in a very specific way. One, don't put Luke Gifford on the field anymore. It's bad. So you do deserve demerits. But them going to a five-man
front, I mean, they don't have any linebackers left, to be fair.
Just play Pinnick or just stay in base. Base being nickel, because they're in base, they're nickel 75% of the time. Just don't bother with the Sam linebacker. They went to a five-man front out of nickel in the second half, and it did better. It did better. It did better than anything Gifford was giving them. So just stop playing Gifford. They figured that out in the second half. Did it look appreciably different? Not really. at least in the run game, it definitely shut down a lot of the screen stuff. They dare, you know, it's exactly what we said. Dared Shedeur Sanders to beat him over the top. He wouldn't do it. His three throws, at least mentally, I'm counting three throws down there, each one of them worse than the last. It's not something that I think they'll be able to do against Tennessee. I'm excited to actually get into that Tennessee tape. I've watched some Cam Ward as of late, and I kind of like where he's going.
I think they put up 3 points today.
So we're going to find out what that was about. But there were a lot of similarities between Ward and Sanders in the draft process, at least to me. So we'll see if Tennessee's going to present any challenges that the Browns didn't. Do you have anybody else you want to talk about?
No, I'm ready to hit some comments.
As am I, my friend, as am I.
All right, start with Cam's dad. Thumbs up, sickos. We're peaking at the right time. I think that's fair.
The show is peaking at the right time.
We are peaking at the right time. Big Tone, 7078. Welcome to the channel. Welcome to the channel, Big Tone. I would hope that's Tony Soprano. Career high in throwaways, probably for Brock. I think that's very possible that that's accurate. I do think he was throwing the ball away a lot more as a rookie and then started feeling himself. And he's like, I'm throwing it every time. But
yeah, I just never view Brock Purdy as a throwaway quarterback. In fact, one of the things that kind of endeared me to him is that not only was he not a throwaway quarterback, but he was somebody who actually would like do effective things when you should have thrown it away. Like this was the exact opposite of what we had seen for so long.
Yeah, you're like, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. Oh no. Oh God. Oh, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm fine with it. I don't think that this is the formula for playoff success or success against playoff teams. But when, again, you're in a situation where you get 20-plus yards of field position advantage, you're having to throw into 30, 40-mile-per-hour winds, which is going to make any sort of experimental play even more challenging. When you're going up against this Browns defense, you just be very, very sharp and don't do anything to hurt yourself, because again, last time the Browns will do that for every party involved and a little bit for games that don't exist yet.
What Gravy and others are asking is Eric Kendricks, who is signed to the practice squad, potentially taking Curtis Robinson or Luke Gifford's job. Certainly I would bet he's going to be the Sam linebacker going forward. And I would bet they train him Mike too, given what they've had to go through there.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know how washed he is though.
I wonder if Robinson can play Sam if Bethune is back in the lineup.
Maybe
you go that route. I think Kendricks is just in there as deep insurance, which again might be called upon.
Yeah, no, I do think he might start playing after this bye week. I mean, it's a perfect time to get him in, and then you get a bye week, see where he's at, get him up to speed. I wouldn't be surprised if he's there, Sam.
Okay. I'm interested to find out what
me too,
if any, he has.
Because Alberto, how good was that Keon White trade? Remember when people got like pissed that the Niners didn't make a trade, but they did? It was just a week early.
Mm-hmm. Because they needed the guy that week.
Yeah. Right. Also, did anyone else acquire an edge rusher that has like made a major difference? I think the Eagles, I forget who the Eagles got. He was like the only one that I remember. Eagles traded for someone.
The fact that it's not ringing a bell very loudly in my head is a clear indication it didn't matter all that much. By the way, how the Eagles win?
They got Jalen Phillips.
Phillips. Yeah. And to be fair, Jalen Phillips was only going to go to the Eagles. That's a Vic Fangio thing from back.
They moved early on him, and there was a familiarity there. Yeah. But like there was. Yeah, point is,
I've only listened to.
And there's another year on his deal.
Eagles, we'll see, but I don't fear the Eagles at all. I just don't. They're fundamentally dysfunctional.
Yeah. Like, no, I don't either.
I think they're... I can make a case for every team in the NFC playoffs to beat the 49ers, except, or just removed. I can make a case for any team in the NFC playoffs, including the 49ers, to go and play in the Super Bowl. The Bears, the Rams, the Seahawks. Fine. I can make a case for all of them.
The
Tampa
Bucks?
Bay. Yeah, I can do it. I can make the case. And then the Eagles, who I think are probably, well, at one point,
they seem
that
upset that they're still winning, that they still have a winning record. They all seem to want the season to end and to perish together.
They did this separately. 2 years ago. Every other year, they just want to completely implode, but they're too talented to just actually do it. And I'm starting to wonder if their head coach is actually any good. I know he just won a Super Bowl. I'm starting to wonder if his
starting
coach
to wonder.
Good.
We've always
wondered. I've wondered for a long time. I've had to shut the hell up.
And, I know.
But like, what are we? It might be a perfect case in point of like, it's kind of NBA-ish in a way where you could just plug anybody competent in there and they'll get the job done. And apparently we're finding the limit of that in Philadelphia right now.
What else we have? All right. We got more. Sanders had nothing to do but throw screen passes. Yeah. I mean, granted, conditions were awful and he has terrible wide receivers. But yeah, I was not impressed. The way people are talking about him is maddening because, again, they're just using him as a proxy for some culture war bullshit that they want to do where it's like, okay, like he hasn't been that good. He's also a rookie who's learning. So like we can both say like I haven't been impressed and there's room for him to improve. That's where I'm at.
So like specifically if we wanted to talk about room to improve, I think there was a couple of great plays in this and you might have noted it to me, Jake.
How about the 4th and 16? Maybe throw the fucking ball.
Right.
Throw an interception.
Also stuff like he keeps looking downfield as if that's just going to be open, like he's still at Colorado.
Right. He missed a guy in the flat who was wide open just because he was like fixated on it, and then I think he took a sack.
I don't know if he can't see the field, but he refuses to see what the field is showing him. Right? He can't
interpret. He is playing at Colorado speed. He's like, I got time to take shots.
And today he did, and the shots still didn't get made. Like, he has the talent. I think he has the arm talent. I think he has the pocket mobility, the off-balance throws. I think that there's a chance for him to be a pretty damn good quarterback, but none of that matters if you don't know how to run an offense. And there's no evidence right now that he can run an NFL offense. And in fact, he's woefully off the mark at this point. And I think that legitimately, if you were to make a bet one way or another, he's so below the mark for what competency is as a rookie because of his inability to just see it and do the basic stuff that it's like, I don't know how he's ever going to get over that. That's such a massive leap.
Again, I'm not a believer. I'm just saying there's room for improvement. Caleb has improved. I mean, and he had some similar issues in terms of just believing stuff's always going to be there. Caleb also has a lot of weapons and a great head coach, and I'm still not fully sold. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And we get to watch a lot of him coming up, which
we do. Alberto asks, is there a scenario where we play Seattle for the division? Yes.
It might be the current scenario.
I think it's, what do the Rams have to lose one more game? Are the Rams at 9? No, the Rams are at 9, right?
Everybody's at 9. It's just a question of L's. Everybody's at 9. Let me pull up Seattle's schedule real quick, Jake. But like, I think that there's absolutely that chance. I think obviously it goes down to.
Well, yeah. So that's the thing is that the Rams need another loss because the 49ers haven't had their bye yet.
So, okay. Here's the final schedule for the Seahawks. They get Atlanta next week at Atlanta. They then get the Colts at home. They get the Rams at home. They get Carolina in Carolina, apparently a house of horrors, and then the 49ers.
So here's the thing. If the Rams lose one more game, and the 49ers win out, the 49ers win the division.
Meanwhile, the Rams get the Cardinals, the Lions, the Seahawks, the Falcons, and then the Cardinals again. It's possible, not probable.
I agree. The 49ers basically have to win out.
I think that's fair. I think that the division would be won then with what, 12 13? It'd be 13 to win the division?
13. It'd be 13.
Yeah. That's a lot of wins.
It's a lot of wins.
That would be in all likelihood, because the Niners would then have...
be insane if the Niners finished 13 and 4.
If they finished 13 and 4 because of their schedule, I think they would also then be the one seed in the NFC, because they would have beaten the Bears in week 17.
Yes.
So that's something that could but probably won't happen. I'm not like,
who
I'll
knows
take
with
them
this
to beat the Titans,
team.
But I'm not sure they're going to beat the Titans. I'm not sure about anything.
I'm pretty sure they're going to beat the Titans.
Okay. What else we have?
We got more. Do we get an Eddie Pinheiro or Sky Moore extension or both this bye week?
Don't be extending anybody.
I would. Yeah, they will. I bet re-sign Sky Moore to a probably at most 2 year. $5 million deal, but more like 1 year, $2.2 million.
I think Sky Moore has been fantastic. There is no reason to be aggressive when it comes to finding a kick, because there was this kid out of BYU the other night that I'm watching returning kicks, and I actually wrote his name down. It was so bad. It was so good. Parker Kingston out of BYU. You might be interested in a Parker Kingston in like the fifth or the sixth round, but I think he can be a better receiver than Sky Moore can be, and now you're talking upgrade. Right. Is that two in the bush over one?
Yeah,
in the hand?
I think they'll try and keep him around on a 1 year deal.
I think so too.
At most $2.5 million.
Yeah, returners, specific returners, don't and should.
You need to have more utility, and he hasn't shown much as a receiver.
No, he's out there.
Speaking of, when is Pierce going to show up? He may be getting open, but not getting thrown to. So, totally fair question.
Okay.
This is a tough game try and get open.
Judge this one, X receiver.
Right.
This.
But for example, last week, wide open for a touchdown, Brock throws a pick. It was either last week or the week, but I think it was the week before. Wide open for a touchdown, Brock gets a pressure in his face, can't get to him. Mm-hmm. So, when is it going to come? Titans game is as good as any, but you know where the ball goes is dictated by a lot of different things. Couldn't tell you, but he looks fine to me.
I wouldn't worry about it in the least bit. The need for production from receivers is a character flaw.
Oh my God, Brock Bowers. Sorry, Brock Bowers just had one of the sickest touchdowns of all time.
I can appreciate that. A first round pick, you want this dude to be, you know, putting up huge numbers and exploding. Like, yes, that is clearly the most desirable outcome. But is he doing his job? Like,
right.
Let's start with that and build to something else. I don't know if he'll ever be a truly elite receiver, because I don't know if anyone could be a truly elite receiver in a Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy offense.
Disagree that that's impossible. Ayuk did it.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well, we're back to is Brandon Ayuk a lead or not, which is a
well, not at this point. His knee exploded.
No, I'm just saying we're going back to the summer of the 24 season, before the 24 season.
Yeah, he was.
Brandon Ayuk is a leader, very good.
He had one elite season. It's hard to say a guy is elite for his career when you've seen it in one season, but he ascended every year. So...
I would like to see one elite.
We'll never see it again, Dieter. He's done.
Brandon Ayuk's done. It's over. I'm not talking about him. What I'm talking about is outside
right.
with Brock Purdy, that is the best receiving season anyone has had. Is that something that Ricky Pearsall can do? I think that anyone who says no isn't watching.
Yeah, I think he can absolutely do that. I think it's dictated by right. Right. It's dictated by a lot of different things. Last one we'll get to. Thank you. Sure. Duck Star Niners. Is there anything we can take away from this game with regards to Purdy? Felt like the Mac Jones game plan. I actually disagree. I don't think it felt like the Mac Jones game plan, because there's a lot of scrambling. There's a lot of movement.
Jesus Christ, can you imagine what would have happened to Mac against that defensive line?
He would have gotten rocked, but he also would have dinked and dunked and gotten the ball out in 0.2 seconds, and they would have had some sort of function and still probably won. I think.
Say this. There absolutely 100% would have been a turnover from Purdy getting strip sacked or hit so hard that the ball pops out. Like, there is one turnover in that game.
If you want to take anything away, it's that, one, he was locked in and efficient and knew what this game required of him, which is to be smart. And he was able to move. He was able to move with his toe. So I think that's what you can take away from it.
100%. His scrambling ability. And I think the ability, think about with 30-mile-per-hour winds that he was going into for, I think, three of the four really good throws that he had down the field. He has to drive it. He has to drive it low on a line. Anything that's in the air is getting caught and being flapped around in a million different directions. So I thought he both drove it. While it wasn't a particularly spectacular game, he drove it and he scrambled. And those are the two things that coming out of the Carolina game, I wasn't sure he was capable of doing. He was so bad in that game in regards to those things. I wasn't sure he had it in him to do it. And he had to prove it. And he did it in circumstances where it was very difficult to do. I can only imagine these cleats don't provide any warmth anymore. They're just thin. They're so thin. It's just this thin piece of plastic now. Like, I can't imagine how cold their feet were through that game. So for him to, maybe it was like cryotherapy for his toe and it made it feel good, but like I would never have known that he had a turf toe injury because there was no manifestation of it in that game. And that's what I'm going to take away. That
I'm with you. I'm right there with you.
Turf toe until it shows up again, if it does.
That's right. All right, folks. Well, that'll do it for us. Go subscribe to the Hutch Report.
Good call.
Thank you. Kept it to the point. And we will talk very shortly. And we'll try and have some stuff.
What a cryptic way of phrasing that.
We'll have some stuff for you over the bye week. I may be in India, but we'll save you some content.
Sounds good. And I'll be around for better or worse.
You'll probably get some solo Dieter, folks. So
God help
buckle up. Appreciate you, folks. Talk later.